Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Every day's a brand new morning since the morning you moved in. Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Yes, I'm feeling like a million since I got you living in.
Of a whole with different feelings to evoke, giving distinction to the role, different players, different strokes.
But let me tell you about one thing I know. Everybody's got a seed to sow. Set your heart apart, take it down the road. Everybody's got a seed to sow.
We're back on WPTF at 9:08. Boy, I'll tell you, we rushed right through that first hour.
Wow.
That's amazing. 919-860-9783, 919-860-WPTF. March, you said you were working on your yard.
Yes.
And you're preparing, you could put fescue, I assume?
Yeah, we sowed fescue.
Seed.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And this is still pretty good time to do it.
It's almost too late.
Yeah.
But you got to get it down.
The leaves on the trees start falling here before
that's right.
long.
And what you've got to do is when you plant seed, they've got to hardy off. They've got to come up and get growing established well enough before the first frost. And so that's why you're fighting time. Mm-hmm. And they suggest mid-September, no later than mid-September. But as our temperatures are slipping to the right, you could probably go and still be successful out to about mid-October, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'll germinate.
Oh, it certainly will.
Just
it's
won't harden
water.
Off,
that's
like you
right.
said.
Yeah, the question is, will it harden up?
You need to cut it a couple of times.
At least too. Once. Yeah. What kind of fescue seed do you plant?
Well, I got a tri-mix. Usually it's a blend. And what I do is I go and pull out the seed trials and look at the results that mm-hmm. NC State does. And so if I find at least two or whatever the blend is, at mm-hmm. least two that are on the recommended from the list, I just was very successful. And my mix was all three of them were on the list.
Okay.
So that's what I do is that's how
yeah,
I select
you need more
myself.
Than one variety. You
right.
need
and,
two or three.
And the reason for that is because disease may be less resistant. One of the varieties may be less resistant to a disease, and the other two may be disease resistant. And so you won't lose everything if you do happen to have things like brown patch or dollar spot or
Said everybody in your neighborhood had brown patch. It was a bad.
Yes, it was bad. It came across and you could tell the yards that had brown patch because you see looks like mowing strips where they had spread it in their own yard, and then all of a sudden everybody else around them the grass was just brown, and it wasn't from lack of water either.
And do you have an irrigation system?
I do not. We do not. We depend on Mother Nature.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, may I make a confession and get your very negative thoughts?
Sure.
Yesterday I found a leftover bag of wart quarl seed.
Oh, I like wart quarl.
And I just took them out there and threw them out on the ground. I might get a little luck on that.
How old is it?
Nature.
How old's the seed?
Well, the seed is only a year old.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I didn't dig up anything.
You don't have to.
Put it on top of the yard.
Was it like a shady nook?
No, it was
top choice.
Top choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
top choice.
That's local.
As long as it gets at soil to seed contact, mm-hmm. You'll be successful. Because if you just throw it on top and it doesn't get the soil contact, it will germinate. It will send out a root. And then the sun will come out and burn it, and you've lost it.
Or it'll wash away, or the birds will eat it.
But it was there, and I thought, okay.
Or dry up.
But if it's 3 to 4 years old, you have less of a germination expectation, because as some seeds get old, they just won't. Yeah.
But I was more concerned about no digging up any kind of soil.
Yeah. As long as you can get it down to the soil level and.
I was thinking, nature seeds. And
sure does. All those weeds, they certainly didn't have any preparation, right?
Okay, well, it would have gone wasted if I hadn't found it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
There we go. Maybe I'll have a little luck with my four-leaf clover and stilt grass. And
as long as it's green, man.
Yeah.
Something to keep the soil going.
I'll tell you, the one thing that I hate, the weeds that I hate are nutsedge.
Oh, they're awful.
So
but they're easy to pull, though.
They are easy to pull.
Especially today. I pulled a couple before I came in today.
But the problem is that the nuts that are at the little
they're
tubers,
ready.
They're there.
And man, they're ready.
They're ready for you to snap them off.
Oh, well. Hey, Steve is in Garner. Steve, good morning.
Let's start off by saying happy birthday to WPTF.
Yeah, 100 years old.
100
you know, we're kind of sketchy on the exact date, but
but they've been announcing it on the radio.
So. Yeah, but it's I think kind of officially the 22nd. I know Mr. Curtis was talking about in a little research and talking about it might be a little early October when the first. Station, which the station that was not WPTF. I mean, it was had different call letters. Came on the air, but this is a Durham Life Broadcasting. Durham Life Insurance Company chose those call letters in the 1930s, early 30s, 1930 when they bought it. So, 100 years old, 1924.
Yeah, hopefully you guys are able to take advantage of your birthday rewards.
What are they?
Like having a job? Yeah. Like having a job. They still let me do this show.
Anyway, it's a little wet to be doing anything heavy out, but you can still do cleanup out there. And then after it dries up a little bit, you can start dividing your daylilies now.
Oh, okay.
It would, when you do that, just as a reminder to refurbish the hole before you put the root back in after you've divided it. And then once you've divided, make sure that you share with your friends or neighbors or whoever you're going to give it to within 7 days after you've bare-rooted them or put them in a pot. If you want to preserve them,
how are you preserving the hole? You said, what are you throwing in there?
Put cow manure and a little bit of fertilizer in it before you put the plant back in it.
Okay, so you're adding some organic matter, compost stuff.
Yeah, I put cow manure in there I organically feed. I don't usually put fertilizer out much. You put too many chemicals out there, and it eventually builds up in the soil. So I try to stay organic as much as I can.
Right.
My garden seems to like it, so that's the way I do it. But in the next couple of weeks, I should be able to get out and start dividing mine. And when I do, I'll have some share plants that I can share with people. So anyway, just thought I'd let you guys know that our next meeting is in October, but I won't start. I'll promote it next week. It's on Sunday, but the Daylily Club does have its meeting, and it will be coming in October. And I'll promote it next week. Anyway, thank you for letting me talk to you.
All right, Steve.
Yeah.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right. John is in Fuquay Varina. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Oh, hey, John.
Hey. So I used to call in as John from Cary.
But they run you out of there, John.
Well, listen, always told people, I said I wanted to retire and move to the coast, but I only got as far as Fuquay.
That's nice. Nice sandy soil there.
But it's all good, and so now I'm calling in as officially as Farmer John in Fuquay Marina. But reason is I moved into a new neighborhood, and it was originally a cow pasture, and so there were no trees, and I just got wall-to-wall sunshine. So I finally had a place to put in a vegetable garden this year, and I had pretty good success with some tomatoes. My squash didn't turn out so good, and my little bell peppers did kind of okay. But, boy, I'll tell you, those Sun Gold tomatoes are unbelievable. I picked off Sun Gold tomatoes yesterday after the rain quit. But listen, I didn't call about really about the garden. Let me tell you what I called about real quick. So our neighborhood, I live on the perimeter of the neighborhood. And it's up, Janelle's is up off Johnson Pond Road. You would know right where it is. Mm-hmm. I told you. And I live on the back perimeter, and all of our neighbors here, there's about 100 yards between us and a forest because they had to put some, you know, retention ponds in behind our homes, BMPs they call them. And then there's a forest, and then down in the forest about another 50 yards is a creek called Terrible Creek. So, yep. Elsa, you probably kind of know.
Very familiar, you know, with Terrible Creek.
Yeah. So, and listen, we have absolutely really enjoyed living here with this view. The ponds are nice. We have tons of ducks and wildlife and all. Yesterday, one of my neighbors brought it to our attention that, and all this land is behind us down to that creek, that's all homeowner association property. Okay. So it's all owned by the homeowner association, including the woods and everything. One of the neighbors yesterday brought up, he had spotted what he believed to be a gypsy moth nest. Now, I've not been down to exactly where he talked about and tried to look up at it myself. I stood out in my backyard with some binoculars and tried to look at it. And then I looked him up online because I don't know anything about gypsy moths. But it does kind of look like what I saw, and I read a little bit, and I'm kind of wanting to get you guys' input. I mean, is this something that is potentially a real problem? I mean, we need to get somebody out here to see about treating this. Or,
well, so is the nest down in the crotch of the plants? And chances are it's probably like the native Carolina cherry laurel. I mean, there'll be tons of other plant species too, but is it in the crotch of the plant?
It's not in the crotch of the plant if you're referencing that as to where, you know, a main branch or so would come off the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
This is more out on, you know, out on a limb. You know, it's you can tell it's, you know, nested in a lot of little small branches.
So,
but it's not right next to the trunk of the tree.
Okay, so it's not in a branch crotch.
I would say it's. I can see it from here because the sun's reflecting on it. I'm probably standing 75 yards away from it.
Because usually the gypsy moth, they form their nest in the crotch of a tree. And typically this time of the year, you see more of fall webworm. So fall webworm is going to be, more out, at the end of the branches or towards the end. So there's a couple methods. They typically crawl back right before dusk to their nest, sort of stay there overnight, and they sleep in a little bit. They wait for the sun to come up pretty good and before they go back to eating foliage. So the good news is you have a little bit of light hours right at dusk and a little bit early in the morning to eradicate these pests. But I think it's more fall webworm.
So are they as threatening as the gypsy moth? What I read about the gypsy moth, the North Carolina State website for State University, had a page on them, and I mean, it sounded pretty serious. You know, they're supposed to call the the Forestry Service, they're quarantined, this, that, and it sounded like they could really be devastating. Mm-hmm. These fall redworms, just how impactful are they?
Well, I mean, you know, both eastern tent caterpillar and fall webworms, I mean, you see them every year, even just, you know, if you're riding the road on 40 or 64 or 70 or wherever, you're going to see them on the edge of woods. You're going to see them in environments that you just explained. They can get into your yard, your trees, but if they have a habitat, woodland, you know, edge of your property, then you're probably more likely to see them there. Now, the gypsy moth, certainly isolating it and trying to positively identify it would be of concern and the right thing to do and report. So, you know, I don't want to stick my neck out there and say it's just fall webworm, but that is my guess.
Is that what you call a spongy moth, too?
I don't know about that. But
I think the spongy moth, Rufus, is the more contemporary name for the gypsy moth. That's what I read.
That's what I heard. I've always heard that it was absolutely awful. Can inhabit over 300 different kinds of trees and things. So
yeah, and that's kind of what I was picking up this morning in my online class, you know, courtesy of Dr. Google. I'm sure y'all all know Dr. Google.
Yep.
But it sounds like the webworm doesn't pose the threat of just like defoliating the whole forest back here or anything like that.
Yeah, it's probably not going to defoliate the whole forest. It's probably going to be more isolated to, you know, two or three different species. Now the other thing about that terrible creek on the Johnson Pond side back in the 20s, there was a person who planted tons and tons of mulberries. So you'll see a ton of mulberries in that area. So they were trying to promote the silkworm. And then, of course, the Depression happened, and now there's mulberries all very, very thick in that area. Over where, you know, Tommy Broadwell owned a lot of that land over there and has developed it. And I landscaped it. But
oh, okay. So that was you.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we are. That's okay. The property I'm talking about.
Yeah, along Johnson Pond and up Whitted Road. I mean, we did a ton of work over there. But the other interesting thing is I had someone, this was probably 25 years ago, that wanted me to isolate a certain number of species in that area. So one of the things I did find in that creek were freshwater eel. I don't know if they're still there, but there were freshwater eel in that creek. I was shocked.
Well, I've been here 15 months, just finishing up my second summer, and I've been wanting to walk down to the creek, but obviously I'm going to do that in the wintertime because it's all wetlands after you get past the retention pond down there. And I'm not going to go down there in the summer without some really thick kinds of, you know, waders on, because I am sure there's more than
snooks.
A couple of cottonmouths roaming around down there. But it wouldn't surprise me that there's some sort of something like that. Down there. I've been asking, do you know why this thing was named Terrible Creek? People have asked me why they call it Terrible Creek, John. I'm like, well, I'm not really sure. I have kind of made up a story.
But, well, that's fine. When in doubt, make it up.
Yeah, I am not sure. I'm trying to think of the guy who just Joe Ashworth would probably know that. He recently just closed down probably third, fourth generation, you know, automotive right downtown on Main Street. But Joe used to live right over there.
Yeah, tire store. Yeah.
Yes, the tire store. He lives on Aiken Street, not Aiken Parkway, but Aiken Street, kind of right behind Vicious Vicious.
Yeah, okay.
So he would probably be the one to know.
I'll have I'll have to track him down. I know the Ashworth and Kerry. We were all good mm-hmm. friends and everything.
Yeah, and Steve Ashworth at the, you know, Ashworth Clothing, he could probably get you hooked up with him. But I'm pretty sure Joe would know the answer to that.
Well, John, I'm not going to Terrible Creek to find out.
Well, John, the big question is what has happened to Terrible Creek since it rained the day before and yesterday?
Oh, it's
swollen. Even more terrible.
It's swollen.
Well, it's there's so many trees behind us. It's difficult to actually see the creek from where I'm mm-hmm. standing here on my back porch, even though, you know, I don't have any trees in the yard or anything. But it's so many trees down in the forest. It's so thick, it's difficult to see the trees. Now, in the wintertime, I can see it a little better because, you know, all the leaves have fallen. And the whole floor down there in those wetlands, it looks like it's a solid mass of stilt grass down there.
Oh, yeah. And that makes it terrible.
That's another reason I'm not going to walk down there in the summertime.
You can hike it back up.
Where you put your foot. But in the wintertime, you can go. I'm going to make a point to do it this winter when it's all cleared out.
So are you on the east side of Johnson Pond Road, the newer subdivision, or are you on?
Okay. Yes, I'm in Meadow Bluffs.
Okay.
So, you know where that is. So,
yes.
Yeah. So I don't think we've got any mulberries back here along our area. At least I'm in the last section that they did. So I'm down here where High Plains ties into Terry Creek Drive.
Gotcha.
But and it's a great neighborhood, great builder. We won't get into all that, but we're very pleased
that Blake
how everything turned out. And you know, I'm liking Fuquay a lot.
I mean, yeah.
You know, we lived, my wife and I. It was the home of our adult years. We lived there 47 years and never thought we'd leave, but family situation came up that brought us to Fuquay. My daughter landed here, and we just decided we wanted to be close.
I think it's a great community. And
yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, I think you'll love
it. It's growing a lot.
And it sure has.
Yeah. Now,
and along with Holly Springs.
Gary, you want to talk about growth? When we got to Cary, it was 12,000 people.
And John, we gotta leave on that note. But thank you so much. We got to do news here.
I appreciate it. Always great to talk.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Bye.
It's 9:36. Mike Rayley here, along with Rufus Edmonston and Nelsa Cox, and retired Lieutenant Colonel Mart Bumgardner of the U.S. Army. And he's also the Horticulture Extension Agent at Johnston County Cooperative Extension Service.
You mean Orange County.
What did I say? Johnston County.
Boy, somebody will whoop you good on that.
Orange County. I don't know why I was thinking of Johnston County. I mean, well, everybody thinks of Johnston County. We're so close and so involved with all that's going on there, and they got such a nice highway now
and lots of plants. lots of nursery growers.
They got the best highway around. So they're part of 40.
It reminds us of our former gardener from Johnston County who left us on this earth.
What's his name?
You know,
blank. I can picture him,
but it's their extension service. Master Gardeners have carried on, you know, for so long now.
Roy,
good job.
It's been he died in 20. When did it? Like April of.
Been 3 years ago.
2020.
Oh yeah, not four.
Yeah, I think about Roy often, and I, you know, it's just what a horrible loss for the Johnson County Cooperative Extension Service, and for us too. But yeah, there are some fine master gardeners, but he was at the top of the list. He could have been an extension agent, majoring in biology at NC State. And
he did a lot of work with the prisons.
Yes. Yeah, teaching those folks how to plant and maybe get on with their lives later on. Now Billy's up, but we've got Pam Walker on here. Pam,
well,
Pam, how you doing?
Hey, good morning.
Yeah.
Hello, Pam.
How are you? Good morning.
Hey, Pammy.
Hey, I was just giving you guys a call. I've been looking at all the horrible pictures and video of the western part of the state this morning, and I just thought I'd give you all a call. I'm going to be working at emergency management in the coming week, and it's just it's catastrophic.
Yeah, we talked and we had folks on from the National Weather Service, and we talked a lot about it. Had somebody on from Rocky Mount too, a friend who talked about it. And I heard from Craig LaHoulier, who is one of the best known tomato people in the country, and has written several books, but he lives out at Hendersonville, and he said it is rough there. Intermittent internet and phone power, no power, trees down everywhere, many roads closed, many without water. He says they're pretty stranded there for the time being, and the damage is unclear right now. He said it felt very much. He lived in the Triangle. He was a chemist for Galaxo Welcome for many years, and he says it felt very much like Fran.
I've had a colleague of mine that I've worked with for a long time, and he's definitely not the dramatic type. And he's worked at emergency management. He's worked in television, and he said that to me when I asked what was going on with the storm. He said it is worse than Florence for the whole state of North Carolina. He says it's absolutely worse. There is so much devastation. And like you mentioned, with the cell phone service and the internet and power, people are just very concerned and frustrated because they can't get through and even find out if their loved ones, how they fared during the storm.
Yeah, well, Pam, you mentioned you're I'm sure you're volunteering to work in emergency management because we know that you're a high-ranking official in the Department of Corrections. So are you a lot of volunteers there?
There will be. They are ramping up. They started ramping up yesterday and adding a lot of staff and volunteers to be able to, respond to all the calls for service, the calls for need and resources, and I'm sure that they will be putting out a call to the public. I encourage people not to do anything on their own, that they wait and listen to authorities. Don't try to drive up there. I mean, when I-40 is shut down in three different places and the town of Asheville is completely shut off, I don't encourage anybody to go up there on their own and try and help or even try and find a loved one. There are a number of people. I spoke with someone yesterday that they ended up going over to the fire station because all of their power poles, not just the power lines, but power poles were ripped out of the ground. And so they said that they felt like they needed to get over to the fire station so they were in a more, secure area. And we're opening up shelters, and we will certainly be trying to get out there to assess the damage as quickly as we can possibly get people out there. But even the first responders are, having a tough time navigating around. There are Swiftwater rescue crews from all over the country, and they need more. I believe somebody told me, which I don't know that much about it, but somebody told me that it was worse than the 1916 storm that devastated North Carolina.
And yeah, I think of how few people there. I guess the Vanderbilt.
I heard my grandmother talk about it, Pam. She mentioned the 16 flood and then the 40 flood, which impacted the mountains very much too. And I of course, don't remember the 40 flood, but I understand from people that were there, a couple of them, that this is even worse.
Right. That's my understanding as well. And don't be complacent. Right now, in and around the Triangle, it's a beautiful day. It's sunny. And not that I want to, scare anybody, but we need to keep an eye on the news broadcast, and I'm sure the governor will be having news conferences throughout the coming weeks. And folks just need to pay attention because, as somebody mentioned on your show earlier, there will be flooding coming downstream. It'll be coming down here and headed out to the ocean. So we need to keep our eyes on it and make sure that we're prepared all across the state.
That's excellent, Pam. I'm glad you brought all of this to our attention. And when do you leave for the mountains?
So I'm headed towards Charlotte today, and then I will be back on Sunday and working at emergency management starting on Monday.
And I'm sure this is something that the state government does, that you'll share as emergencies pop up, share personnel.
Right. We definitely have one of the best, if not the best, state emergency response teams in the country. That's what's so wonderful and it just really hits you in the heart when you see all of your state agencies working so closely together. Everybody pitching in. Nobody worries about titles. It's just whatever you can do to help. There's DIT, there's public safety, there's adult correction, there's health and human services. All of us have some role when there's a devastating storm like this. But in this circumstance, everybody will do whatever that needs to be done, whether or not it's in their lane or not. They will do their best to help people out, and it's just wonderful to see the collaboration. It's tough to see the devastation and the people that are hurting, but then you can't help, it warms your heart to see folks working together and trying to help their neighbor.
Pam, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and again, our prayers go out to all the people who have been devastated by this in different parts of North Carolina, but especially the western part, and for the first responders who are dealing with it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the linemen and, the medical staff and you name it. And then I was just thinking about, the animals and then also just the devastation to the crops and what's going to happen to the Christmas tree industry this year.
Apples.
The pumpkins.
Apples, all of it. It remains to be seen, but it's bad. It is really bad.
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate you calling very, very much, and keep us updated on this.
Will do.
Thank you. Have a
thank
nice
you.
Day, Pam.
Goodbye.
All right,
bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Pam is a deputy secretary with the Department of Correction, and we have quite a state government, as Rufus can attest to. It's they work together.
Well, she was correct in one thing. We do have the best ranked emergency planning department in all of America.
Yeah,
and we've shown that time and time
well
again.
Recognized.
Yeah,
by FEMA and others.
Well, I'd like to also just put a plug in for each county that have their own emergency services.
Yes.
Right.
And they are sub to the state level.
Right, absolutely.
Very good point.
Billy Howe is with us from the state, another state government section from the Department of Agriculture and the State Farmers Market. Billy, good morning to you, my friend.
Well, good morning.
I know that you have been talking to farmers. We have definitely gotten too much rain during September, but they keep figuring out how to bring crops to the market.
They do. It's been big obstacles and challenges, that's for sure, this whole year between drought and rain. It's plagued the guys, and I've talked to them, especially in the last few days. But they keep right on chugging along. And they start looking down the road and trying to figure out what to do now for next week, you know, and for next month. So.
We're busy. A lot of people at the market today, even in spite of all the weather?
Well, today it's getting there. There's quite a few coming out. It's a beautiful day. Weather's great. And a lot of our farmers are here. We had a couple who couldn't make it in yesterday due to the rains. But I would say that we're 99% of our vendors are here today. I was talking to one of the employees for one of the farmers, one of the apple farmers that headed up on to Hendersonville and got trapped over there yesterday. So I waiting to hear if he ever has been able to make it back down towards the foothills and through flatland yet.
Wow, that is something.
So I guess you got a lot of plant sets out there now. People are selling coal crops and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, well, we still have a lot of our summer vegetables still going, squash and zucchinis and cucumbers as well. And we're starting to see, like, pie pumpkins are coming in, of course. I saw some patty pan squash yesterday that were probably about 6 inches in diameter. They were real nice squash.
I worry about, and I know y'all have gotten in a lot of pumpkins. Nelson Cox was, and I were talking about the pumpkins. I know Sparta was probably hit by this flooding, and there are a lot of pumpkin fields up that way.
Yeah, I hadn't talked to Gage this morning, but works over at Scott's Pumpkins. He runs the state down here for Scott's, and they're from Sparta. I hadn't had a chance to talk to them, see what type of damage they had out at their place.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people affected. So we're through with peaches, and we're worried about the apple crop in the mountains. But you do have some really good apples, because I had I've had some Stamen wine saps from the market this week.
Yes, actually this morning I got me a little thing of apple cider while I was down there to go along with it, you know.
Fantastic.
You getting tipsy, Billy?
It was not hard cider, was it, Billy?
They won't let me do that.
Okay. Yeah. Especially with a golf cart.
You're right. I'm always ready for it.
By the way, I was out there 2 days ago, and Billy, and saw just a huge number of camellias and things that need to go in the ground in the fall of the year. Just beautiful camellias.
That's right.
Encore azaleas, it was full of them.
Yes, so our whole building is full from one end to the other and outside in the tent, from produce to all the plants, the pumpkins, mums. I don't know that I've ever seen mums so pretty. And the way they got them laid out, you go down there, you can pick the ones where it's in full bloom right now, or some of them haven't opened up yet, and it'll serve you well for the rest of the fall.
Well, what about the market shops? Oh, one thing, before we go to the market shops, y'all had a big festival this week. How did that turn out?
Oh, that was awesome. We had Soybean Association was here. The apples, North Carolina apples was represented. North Carolina State turf was represented. And I think what the kids liked the most between the, they either, it was the face painting, or the pumpkin chunking.
Pumpkin chunking.
Pumpkin chunking.
Hey, I got to tell you, Sim.
That's hard on the back.
Yeah, Sim used to be our manager here. Yeah, he's director, assistant director of domestic marketing. He built this pumpkin chunking thing that is built out 4x4s, and it has like bungee cords and a little piece of cloth where you set your pumpkin at, and you pull it back, and you just lock slingshot this thing out.
Oh my God!
Well, that thing could land over in the Dix property, couldn't it?
He must be using chitlins as a sling.
Oh. We'll have to check on that.
But those cheetahs, they would chunk a pumpkin, they'd get right back in line. They'd go, I want to do it one more time.
That's cute.
That is, yeah. So,
and don't worry, the pumpkins won't waste it. They got sent off to the cows and hogs.
Okay. I'm glad the hogs, our best of the hogs.
Got some of the old produce. I said, well, did your hogs tell you thank yous last night? She said no, but they shut up squealing.
Hey, Billy, we got Monica on the line here. She's down at Mule Days. We're going to put her on in the same time here.
I ain't in trouble, am I?
No. I was just checking. I'm just thinking back. I don't think you said anything wrong. Hey, Miss Monica.
Good morning.
Are they going to make you the Mule Days Queen?
Well, no. I think there's plenty of others taking on that role.
Okay.
So I'm just here to support and watch and get Mackie on the right float and all that fun stuff. And
yeah, we got about five. We got about 5 minutes here, just to let you know before before news. But yeah, it sounds like y'all had a big time. Did you chunk any pumpkins?
We did Thursday.
Yeah. So y'all didn't get hurt, did you?
No. I don't think there was any injury.
Y'all didn't point them at anybody or anything, did you?
No. Everybody okay. was safe, and we didn't use Billy as a target or anything. I think there was a few people threatening. Yeah.
Well, what role is Maggie playing in the Mule Day Parade festivities?
Actually, this year is the 75th anniversary of Mule Day, and so they're doing a lot of different things. And so where she was Little Miss Fences years ago, they have a float representing all of the queens.
Queens
from all the years before of the Little Miss, Junior Miss, and Teen Miss, and the Miss.
Yeah, we don't like to talk about that very much because of Rufus.
We won't even go there today.
It brings back some memories. And
that's right. We're going to keep it all positive. But yes, they so she's on the float kind of commemorating all the former Little Miss Bensons.
And they didn't have the mothers with them, did they?
Well, I was back there, if that counts.
Maggie's going to be running things down there before long. She might be the mayor of Benson someday.
Oh, you never know, right?
We
never know. So big time. If anybody that's listening has never been to Mule Days, you know, maybe plan to come next year. There's a lot of festivities going on still today and all through the weekend. And of course, there's a rodeo tonight. The parade's about to get started. There's music in the Grove here on Main Street all afternoon, and just all kinds of fun stuff going on. And
it's easily accessible. Y'all are right on 95 and just off of 40.
Mark, I have great fond memories of all of the above.
Yeah.
The Grove, the rodeo. Was it Mr. McLeod, I believe?
Oh, there are a lot of McLeods down there.
Willis McClams
and McClams.
McClams.
So, Rufus, did you ride a mule while you were down there?
I never rode a mule, but I sure was a judge.
Okay.
Did you kiss the mule?
Yeah, did you kiss a mule?
Oh, many times.
That's what all the queens do. They get to kiss the mule.
How about that?
Yes. The year they win, that's what they get to do. And Mule Days is, like some of the folks have been talking about it, making it for 75 years. There's a lot of festivals that don't make it that long. And, you know, the fun thing about it, and we're talking about agriculture and everything else, is that that's why Mule Day started. It was basically celebrating the mule, which was the work animal behind farming back in the day before there were tractors.
I remember them vividly.
Yep, that's how Mule Days got started, because Benson was well known for all the mule stables. And there were several mule stables in the town of Benson, and that is what the McClam brothers and some others got together, and they decided to start Mule Days. And it's still going 75 years later, so that says a lot. And there is still a mule stable that you can take a tour of that was one of the actual original mule stables back in the day. And that's really neat. You can take a tour of it and learn even more about agriculture. They had the mule festivities yesterday, where they do the different contests and they choose the grand champion mule. And They had a workhorse or a mule demonstration yesterday, where they did plowing and everything using the mule. So that was really neat.
Well, just don't find yourself on the south end of a northbound mule.
There you go.
That's what I always say.
That's not the place to be. That's right.
And if you can't be at Mule Days, you can get yourself a good meal at the State Farmers Market Restaurant or the Market Grill. You can get you a Rufus dog, or you can get you some seafood from Kemp's out there.
Most definitely. As everybody's traveling around, you can take it all in, because there's plenty of beautiful day to get out and celebrate the festivals, whether it's here or in another town. It's that time of year where there's festivals all over the state, and where, of course, with State Farmers Markets, you can always stop by and do some shopping and walking around and, like you said, enjoy a meal, and no better place to do it.
We got about 30 seconds. What's your next event coming up at Farmers Market?
We'll have our decorated pumpkin contest coming up in a couple weeks, so we're looking forward to that. And of course, if you're getting ready to decorate, we got lots of pumpkins and everything else out there that you can decorate with.
All right. Well, you be safe over there. Billy, that's the easiest report you've ever had to give, isn't it?
Hey, he does that way better than I do.
I didn't mess up Billy's his morning.
No, he reared back in the rocking chair. He's fine.
He's relieved he wasn't on report.
Y'all take care. We got to go.
All right. Y'all have a good
bye-bye. We'll be back after the news.